I have been a journalist for almost 20 years, worked in local media, mainstream and independent media, internet, radio and TV.
That is Carla Minette, Executive Director of the Center for Investigative Journalism in Puerto Rico, or CPI, as it's referred to in Spanish.
I think that journalism is a key part of every society in terms of what's happening in the world, what's happening in your local communities, in government, etc. But it's also a source for cultural change.
This is Finding Humanity, and I'm your host, Hazami Bermada. Through true stories of courage and purpose, we put a human face on the biggest challenges of our time. This season, we will focus on how women's excellence shapes history. In each episode, we bring you powerful voices of women sharing challenges that they had to overcome across different fields and cultures, and their journey to achieving greatness. Carla is originally from Puerto Rico. Her interest in journalism began to develop in high school.
I had great Spanish teachers, and they were very enthusiastic about my writing and about developing my writing skills. And they probably were the ones who pointed out that I had some talent that I should develop. My parents thought that I would study something else, like accounting or something different. In Puerto Rico, at least, studying journalism is not seen as a desirable profession. Many people think that you would not have many opportunities, let's say. So when I said I was going to be a journalist and I studied journalism, it was cold water for my family.
But Carla's parents soon came to accept her decision. They realized that Carla was extremely committed to her career. She decided to go to college in the city, an hour away from where they lived. Carla received a joint degree from both the University of Barcelona and Columbia University in New York.
I came back and started very quickly to work on an agriculture newspaper and in a high school career development magazine. I came to be the editor of that magazine very soon and worked for a few years developing that magazine that went to all high schools in the island. While doing that, I also was giving newspaper workshops at high schools, at public schools in Puerto Rico. So I teach students to develop their own newspapers. So I would say that very early in my career, I did projects that were oriented towards low-income communities and working with underserved, marginalized communities in Puerto Rico.
Carla went on to work for different media outlets, occupying various positions. Throughout her extensive career, she lived and saw the challenges that women in journalism face.
In some of my work experiences, I was usually recognized for what I was doing, but all these enterprises were led by men. Most definitely, in many cases, I confronted machismo, you know, sometimes also harassment. You are sometimes underpaid in terms of how you are overworked as compared to other people in the team, and not having sometimes the leading roles that you are working for.
Carla's experience is reflective of the current media landscape. According to a 2020 Reuters Institute research conducted across four continents, women occupy 40% of positions in journalism, but only 23% of top editors are women. Women in journalism are also paid less than men. According to a survey across 14 U.S. newsrooms, women earn just 83% of men's median salary in 2020. Moreover, female journalists are more likely to experience online harassment or sexual assault on the job. I spoke to Elisa Liz Munoz about the current landscape of women in journalism. Elisa is the executive director of the International Women's Media Foundation.
The International Women's Media Foundation was founded 30 years ago with a mission to promote women in journalism. And the founders of the organization recognized a glass ceiling that they were encountering in their own careers. And at the same time, they recognized the violence and difficulties that their colleagues around the world were encountering. So they set up an organization that kind of had dual roles. It recognized the danger that women journalists encounter around the world and wanted to recognize their bravery with the Courage in Journalism Awards, but it also wanted to support women journalists around the world by providing opportunities and skills building.
Why do you think that women are not making it into senior executive and leadership positions? What's that barrier?
I think there isn't just one barrier, obviously. I think people point to the employment issues around having a family and being able to dictate your own schedule. Honestly, if I want to be frank with you here, I just don't buy it. I don't think it's an issue of women not wanting those roles or opting out of those roles because they want to raise a family. We talk to women every day who have children and operate at higher levels in the news media and do so. Obviously, it's difficult. There are a lot of professions that are difficult to have families around. But I really believe that what we're talking about is the basic inequity of women not being able to rise in their professions, being looked over for beats, being looked over for assignments, being looked over for promotions. We hear that this continues to happen repeatedly.
Social media, according to Elisa, has also changed the type of harassment that women in journalism face.
Attacks against women journalists have definitely evolved over the decades. We started providing hostile environments training many years ago, and that was really focused on the physical dangers that women journalists face. And in the last decade, as media organizations really submerged social media into reporting and journalists' lives, their personal identity started to become much more a part of their reporting, we have definitely seen how that has impacted the day-to-day operations of women journalists who have to be out there on social media, and that meshes their personal identity with their professional identity. It's been well documented that being harassed and attacked online to the extent that these women journalists are results in symptoms that mimic PTSD. So these attacks are real, even if they're happening virtually.
And do you see any difference when it comes to male counterparts experiencing the similar levels of harassment or maybe online abuse?
The research and also the anecdotal information that we receive is that there is a real difference in the way that men and women are attacked online. And that difference is in scope, the amount of harassment and attacks that they face, but also in the kind of attacks that they face. Women face gender-based violence. It's about their female identity. It's focused on violent attacks against their person, against their bodies, and against their families. The kinds of attacks that men have reported facing have more to do with what they're reporting on and attacking their opinions. Obviously, we know that identity-based attacks really impact journalists of color much more than they impact white journalists, for example, and also LGBTQI journalists are also similarly attacked. So it's based on the writer's identity or the journalist's identity.
As Elisa notes, female and minority journalists experience online harassment more often. Think Tank Demos analyzed more than 2 million tweets. The study found that women journalists experienced approximately 3 times as many abusive comments on Twitter compared to their male counterparts.
Trolling and attacking individuals online works to a certain extent. And because it works, it's a tool that has been picked up to a great extent by political leaders, by anybody who journalists are focusing their attention on. And it's not only the individuals who initiate the attack. There's all kinds of opportunistic individuals out there who join these attacks. And it's been documented that these attacks are orchestrated, they're organized, and they oftentimes result in the desired effect, which is to silence the journalist that's being targeted. When you don't have women journalists covering the same conflict that a male journalist is covering, or a woman journalist of color, or a male journalist of color, you're shutting out so much of what is happening on the ground, because it can be perceived and reported in so many different ways. One way is not better than the other, but what we have seen historically is the issues that impact women are covered less, they're reported less. In many countries around the world, it's an access issue. If you're not a woman, you literally cannot talk to women in that community. And for that reason alone, it's imperative that women be out there covering these stories.
People of color are also more likely to be targeted. This online harassment, combined with the hostile newsroom environment that journalists of color often face, is causing many to leave. In fact, in 2020, more than 1 in 3 journalists who left the Washington Post's newsroom were Black. Even though Black journalists made up only 9.2% of newsroom employees that year. This is worrisome, especially given that 77% of newsroom employees in the United States are white, according to a 2018 Pew Research Center analysis.
What we have seen in the U.S., especially in the last couple of years, is that despite efforts that are taking place in major newsrooms in our own country, there doesn't seem to be a lot of progress, and underrepresented individuals in society continue to be underrepresented in their newsrooms. And despite these efforts to address it, it just doesn't seem to be working. And we've been reading articles about individuals, journalists of color, leaving major newsrooms in large numbers. And obviously, the attempts to address these issues are not working, and there needs to be more involvement, I think, of the journalists who are impacted in the solution, not in creating the solution, but in being part of the leadership and being part of making that change.
Carla is one of the journalists leading this change. Her team at the Center for Investigative Journalism is 90% women.
I have led a team that has won incredible awards. We have a training institute at the center in which we also train local and regional journalists from the Caribbean. So I feel like we've done a lot in the past years. I have a great team of reporters. It's a 15 journalist team right now. We came from being volunteers 15 years ago to have a 15 reporters newsroom right now. It's very complex and very challenging to maintain and grow this organization since we are a nonprofit. But I find that my leadership is part of this growth. And yes, we have great plans for the future for the organization to keep going and keep doing excellent job.
But Carla's team often experiences retaliation for bringing the truth to light.
We've had to publish stories that, you know, go against general beliefs or go against notions that the people have about something. And they sometimes shock the audience. But if the facts are there and we've validated them and we've done all of our fact checking, etc., we put them out there. But yeah, we have a lot of backlash. We have to prepare emotionally, not only me, but our reporters. We need to be very healthy to deal with what it takes to put information that is not convenient out there. Sometimes we even have to ignore the bullies and all the bots that in Puerto Rico we've been dealing with since we published a very important story, which caused the governor to resign, the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rosellón. And since then, we've had a lot of bullies in social media that sometimes are just harassing our journalists.
Carla is referring to reporting in 2019 that caused the resignation of then Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosello. Carla and her team published homophobic and misogynistic messages between the governor and nearly a dozen of his political allies, who are all men. People took to the streets, and just after 11 days, Rosello resigned. Since then, Carla and her team have been experiencing even more online harassment.
What we have been doing in our team, we've been training them on how to deal with this bullying in terms of strategies to deal with that and how to understand what's happening behind that, because sometimes it's just a machine repeating words. So you have to rationalize what's happening with this online harassment. We also provide mental health support to all of our journalists for any moment they need that support. We've developed internal policies, you know, a handbook on how to best use social media. We have been developing certain tools to make journalists be as comfortable as possible with this reality that comes with our work. We cannot put the pause button and, you know, make it disappear. We'll have to deal with this. We are dealing with this. But I have to admit that it's sometimes frustrating and it gets into you. You know, I think it should be somehow limited because most definitely this goes into people's careers, into people's mental health, into people's family lives. It has consequences for some people that are harder and it shouldn't be permitted, you know, under the umbrella of freedom of expression.
Ironically, allowing harassment in the name of freedom of expression can impact the freedom of the press.
I think it's important to recognize that online violence is a press freedom issue.
That's Elisa again.
It's a matter of not being able to report on the things that matter because doing so creates such a backlash that it literally makes it impossible for a journalist to do her work for a certain period of time. We have heard from women journalists in our network that when they take on certain stories, they're prepared to spend the next 4 days either ignoring their social feeds or cleaning out their social feeds. They spend 2 days before the assignment also making sure that their digital hygiene is in order so that they're safe and they can't be found. And then they report, and then they have to spend 2 days cleaning up the mess. That's a huge disincentive to report on certain issues. If you know going into a story that that's what you're going to have to do, it's a natural response to veer towards another subject, to cover it in a way that might not attract that kind of backlash. So society is definitely suffering the consequences of the trolls and individuals that want to shut out these women's voices and shut out the discussion of these important topics.
Some efforts have been made to address this issue, but Elisa believes that we are still far from finding a solution.
The IWF has created the Coalition Against Online Violence, which is a group of 60-plus media development, media organizations, and other groups who don't even work in the media space to help figure out solutions to help women protect themselves. There are all kinds of digital hygiene practices that one can employ. There are digital security experts that organizations like the IWF make accessible to women journalists. So there is support out there. What I would say is that most media organizations, large and small, aren't doing enough to help protect the women journalists that are being attacked online or that have the potential to be attacked online.
Despite the lack of progress, our current reality is forcing some to realize the important role that journalism plays in a healthy democracy.
I think the conflicts that have happened in the past several years, the social justice movement in the United States, COVID-19, Afghanistan, Ukraine, are all putting into stark relief the critical role that journalists play around the world. And I think that that has really helped journalists and journalism. I know that it has certainly helped media development organizations in terms of the recognition of the work that we do and the importance of it. The recognition of the importance of the role of journalists contributes to their safety to a certain extent. It really is critical to support journalism in order to keep journalists safe. It requires money, it requires effort, it requires training, and all of that requires a media organization that is functioning and should and can expend the resources necessary to keep their journalists safe.
To protect democracy, we must first protect journalists.
Journalists are watchdogs for communities against the powers that govern them. And if you don't have journalism, those powers go unchecked. Poverty levels increase, corruption increases, voting decreases. The danger to our communities when the media goes away is so, so high. So I think that the role of journalism is to help democracy function.
On our podcast, we aim to educate and inspire you to take action. There are many ways to do that. Here are just a few suggestions. First, support smaller and independent media organizations that are led and run by diverse journalists. Donate, share their articles, and subscribe to their channels. Second, go out of your way to read women journalists and diverse journalists outside of mainstream media. And third, if you see online harassment of women or minority journalists, stand up and advocate for them. If you'd like to hear more empowering stories from Finding Humanity or to learn more about this episode, visit our website at findinghumanitypodcast.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Your ratings and reviews help Finding Humanity reach new audiences. So we thank you for your support. In our podcast, we cover pressing and at times controversial social and political issues. The views and opinions expressed are those of the interviewees and do not reflect the positions or opinions of the producers or any affiliated organizations. Finding Humanity is a joint production of the Humanity Lab Foundation and Human Group Media. Our co-executive producers are Camille Lorente and Hazami Bermada. Associate producers are Fernanda Ollegas and Tani Jirapaprasok. Policy and background research by Carolina Mindica and Tani Jirapaprasok. Mixing, editing, and music by Maverick Aquino. For this episode, I'd like to thank Carla Minette and Elisa Liz Minos. I'm your host, Hazami Bermada. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.